I'm Chris Farrell from Walking the Walking Dead, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual, but you can check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Now get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 163 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we head out on another whirlwind adventure, seeing the universe, meeting a cavalcade of fantastic species and bizarre personalities, taking tremendous chances, and risking our lives to... Guys, I'm going to need a moment on this. My name is Keir, in the GPR studios with you, and joining me, as always... is Jay. Jay, how are you?
Where are the extra Kleenex boxes? I've got like four empty ones here. I need a new one.
Just use a towel. We're out. And over there is Haley. Haley, get up.
I'm a little overclimped. Talk amongst yourselves.
Doesn't get easier with rewatches.
No.
So this week we are forced to stand by and witness a conclusion we knew was coming, but were nonetheless unprepared for. In the midst of a well-crafted mystery and a hidden London street filled with aliens, immortal hybrids, the Doctor is being stolen away, but not before a critical error in judgment steals something else from us.
Too soon.
I don't know. That's maybe one of the things we're going to have to discuss tonight about the timing of this. Was this about the right time to do this? It's funny. Does it not feel like we are in like the waning episodes of the series here? It's like I had a couple people that were just sort of just starting to really ramp their interest back up in the show, and they said, oh, "Well, okay, well, how many episodes do we have left to go in the season? There's still a lot of stuff that's going to happen, right?" Mm-hmm. Well, you've got two.
Yeah. Just the two.
That's it.
I know. Okay, well, that feels right, because I watched this and I was like, okay, well, this is leading into the finale. That's where this is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it feels like this series has gone by really quick. Like there should be more coming in the pipe, but...
It's because of all the two-parters. We got fewer stories, so it made it seem like it went faster. Mm.
And that's probably exactly what it is, yeah. But, you know, this is one thing that was brought to my attention, though, is that, you know, at the end of this episode, not to jump to the very end, but, you know, it goes directly into the to be continued. So this is the first part in apparently a three-parter.
I know. We were told this was going to be a standalone. Lied to.
Which means that Sleep No More is really the only true standalone in the whole series. And it stands alone for very good reasons.
Because the cheese stands alone.
Yes, but well, here's the funny thing. You know, when you sit there and you look at it, okay, so the fact that it gets broken apart is strictly by writer, because same director last week to this week for Justin Malotnikov. So, and a very different tone. Just everything about the episode felt very different. Obviously, because we're getting back away from the found footage and that sort of thing. But but just in the base material and the way it gets edited and the way some of the exchanges and things are done, it just, the pacing felt very different. It was just a wholly different story.
It's a different type of story. Last week we had, you know, the monster scary episode, and this was a mystery episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A villain free.
Yeah.
Unless, and maybe that's something I want to discuss here, since the primary plot here is obviously Rigsy being on trial and on this trap street and everything, and determining whether or not the quantum shade death sentence that's on him is justified or not. As all that develops, do we really have a villain? Do you really consider Mayor-me, a shielder, to be the villain in this? Or is she just along with it? She's sort of well, not even a vehicle, but she's just sort of ancillary.
Yeah, no,
I think she is the villain once you know what's going on, but for most of the story, you don't realize there's a villain.
I don't even think that she's a villain. I think that she's a pawn. She's being used by someone else, and we'll hypothesize about that later on, but... You know, this was all something like she was forced into, so it's not something that she really, you know, concocted herself. I can't really call her the villain in this one. This is just
the antagonist, though.
Yeah, she's the antagonist, but that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's, well, it's like, you know, you've got your judge, jury, and executioner. So if she's the judge on this, the jury is the towns or the people of this street here, which is a fascinating thing in and of itself. And I just want to take a second to just applaud the hell out of Sarah Dollard for an amazing script.
Oh yeah, absolutely spectacular.
This just had so much to play with.
Yeah, I mean, for a freshman writer, you know, the first attempt for writing for Doctor Who, and I mean, she hit it out of the park. I'm having trouble thinking of anyone that wrote something this good on their first episode.
Neil Gaiman, but that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, no, it's, and that's one of the things I've heard said is that this was one of the best Gaiman episodes if Gaiman knew how to write for Doctor Who.
He wakes up one morning and says, I don't even remember writing. I must have been sleep writing.
I'm willing to say, I don't know if you guys would agree, this was the strongest episode of the season.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'd have to jump on that, yeah.
I'm gonna hold off on calling it that. Very impressed with it, but I'm not necessarily sure. I'm still gonna have to play with that for a little while. I want to go back and do one of my, you know, closing in on the finale marathon power watch.
Yeah,
everything probably
except for that one. No more.
Yeah, but yeah. Other than that, because you've got the aspects of this collection of alien species, which was a ton of fun. I mean, just that moment seeing the Ood working over the Cybermen.
Yes.
And so forth. I mean, he keeps referring to this is like a, you know, this is a collection of some of the most violent species in the universe. I forget exactly how he phrased it, but she indicates that they're all here in a peaceful arrangement. You know, that she's able to maintain this, which says quite a bit about her character. Going from being, you know, the highwayman kind of thing, or the nightmare, to finding this new lot in life. All aspects of it. Some of the classic elements that were put in there, knowing the relationship where it stands right now between Doctor and Clara. She wrote that beautifully, you know, in terms of just the way that they, you know, even when you had no suspicions of what was really going on in the episode, even, you know, within the first 15, 20 minutes or so, when they're just kind of toying around, and, you know, joking with each other and such. It's just, I was just amazed through it. You know, she had his sillier sides. You know, did you make this human? You know,
yeah.
Oh, don't bring the new human with me. It's just going to distract me and that sort of thing. It's fun. So she's got that
thing. Right.
She made Rigsy more enjoyable.
Yeah,
I feel.
I don't know if she made him more enjoyable.
Him,
yeah, flatline. But he felt like a plot device. He didn't feel like a character. It was, okay, we need someone whose memory's been wiped, who's blamed for something, and then they're just going to stand off to the side and don't get in the way of the story. Because really, aside from being the, you know, the bait, literally, what was the point? What was the point of him being there?
Right. Really, once he gave the counter to Clara, he could have gone home, and it wouldn't have changed the story.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, he did help with, like, finding the keyhole on the stasis pod. And...
Yeah, that but was, anybody that was, could have done that. Yeah.
No, yeah, no, that was crucial for him.
He became the Shaggy for the episode.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love the character of Rigsy, and I thought it was great seeing him again, but it definitely felt like, well, there needed to have been more of a point to that, but whatever.
Well, not every supporting character can be, you know, load-bearing. You know? Sometimes they're just there to hold the curtain up. I don't know. But things like, and a lot of people were having fun with this over the last couple of days, the retcon reference.
Yes.
Oh, that was such a tease.
That was. It really was. Because I'm
expecting Jack to come popping out.
And that's exactly
what... I didn't expect to see Jack, but I thought we might see... Well, I knew we wouldn't see Miles because we would have heard if we were going to see her, but...
You know what would have been great is if they had in the alley there, one of the creatures would have been a Weevil.
That would have been cool.
That would have been perfect.
Nice.
Oh, but going back to like some of the moments that shows that they've been tying in, and again, this is again since we know that the writers sort of work within their little respective bubbles, but he used the nice things to say cards.
Yes.
Yes.
That was,
which were introduced this season. So that must have been something where they, you know, somebody had given her knowledge or told her, you know, drop this in. This is going to be a nice little ad.
And that was great too. That he did it without being cued. He did it without Clara saying, "Get the cards." He just went over and picked them up and started looking through them on his own. And I was like, "This
this should look really weathered." Like they've been getting a lot of use over the last.
But couple I mean, months. That shows the growth that the Doctor has gone through in this series. You know that that he understood. Wait, this is one of those situations where I need to be careful. And then, you know, he calls Riggsy by name, and Riggsy immediately picks up on it too. He's like, "No, no, no!
He's you like, call wait, me local no, knowledge. I'm call putting me putting."
Do not use my name, you know. So it was some fantastic dialogue, even between all three of them. You know, just I really cannot speak highly enough about this script.
Yeah, so the dialogue was amazing. There were also a lot of nice structural parts of the script. Like, there were several instances during it, the story, where they pointed out how Clara has become kind of reckless, and she's endangering herself a lot. We get it at the very beginning where they're coming off of the adventure we didn't see where she almost died. And then when they're flying the TARDIS around,
and she's
enjoyed
out,
that way too much. Tell me about it. It's an ongoing problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, this really has been signposted from the beginning of the series where, you know, Clara has gotten herself into situations and had to have been reined back when, you know, that's the companion's job for the Doctor, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the crux of their major exchange, you know, as we come towards the conclusion of the episode, is the fact that when she finally comes to the realization, she has to talk him down in order to finally articulate what we had been seeing and the fact that she was doing herself in through her own addiction to adventure, a reckless addiction, and that the risks were being done for something that felt more than just a matter of, oh, she's genuinely enjoying this. She's built for this. She's meant to be a companion all along. No, there's something far more going on here. She's risking life and limb on a regular basis because it's almost as if she has a death wish. So, you know, and doesn't come to the point of actually saying that, but you know, again, this we were saying about the quality of the script. Go back and grab the transcript and just read this through as a story, and it's brilliant right off the page, because it's just very well. I know I was following a lot of Dollard's tweets and things as she was going through her edits on this and stressing over certain speech. She couldn't discuss which scenes she was working on at the time. She said, you know, she's working through some very complicated moments and such, and she was like getting advice from, you know, from some of the folks at the top of the chain. And it was just really interesting to see whatever it couldn't. I had no context, obviously. No one had any context for what it was she was freaking over.
Right.
But now you can see that she was just being so meticulous to detail on this for such good.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that they chose to give an episode where they knew a companion was going to be killed off to a brand new writer.
Yeah.
That says something about some of the changes and risks that the production team has been taking this past season. Maybe it's a matter of saying, you know, because already people are starting to make some of the comparisons to some of our more recent companion exits, or actually companion demises. You know, going back and from Adric and onward and such, but comparing to Clara's, no one's still happy with Donna's and so forth because it feels like a, you know, like the loss that wasn't allowed to be a loss and that thing.
Yeah.
But this, remember that they've been saying emphatically for the last month and a half or so, when they say, well, you know, how is this exit going to be? Is it going to be a ride off into the sunset kind of thing? And Moffat was the one who said, no, gone is gone and has to be done this way.
You know, this... I'd like to point out that this is what we talked about after the Christmas special last year. We said, okay, this was her chance to have her happy ending. This was her chance to, you know, to go out and have a full life and all that good stuff. And they didn't do that. So if you're going to make that believable, you have to have her die and have it be a senseless, pointless death, which it was. This wasn't a noble sacrifice. You know, yes, she took the counter from Riggsy, but that's because she thought she was going to get out of it. It wasn't, let me sacrifice myself for you. And so there was really no point to this. It didn't serve any purpose aside from getting rid of a companion. And it was perfect for the way that they have told her story so far.
Yeah. Which is, I think, what has a lot of people having a hard time digesting. Because if it were not done to this caliber, then the outrage...
Oh, yeah.
Their little internet pitchforks out, but they're not. They're just feeling very remorseful, and there's still a shock factor and such. If anything, people are just kind of picking apart. Well, the doctor's reaction was unusual, and it's not right.
The doctor's reaction was fantastic. I mean, Capaldi played that whole scene like just with his eyes. He just, you know, when Clara was telling him, you know, giving her speech, you could see him like just trying to process what was going on and struggling with it, not knowing what to do because he was just at a complete loss. And just if you go back and just watch Capaldi's face through that entire scene, it is perfect. I mean, it is on par with the performance he gave in Zygon Inversion.
Well, she calls it out. I mean, everything that he's about to say, because she knows him. At this point, she knows him so well, which is something we couldn't have said a year ago. But now she knows him so well that before he can even open his mouth and start to launch into a Malcolm Tucker tirade against Schilder or whatever it was that he was prepared to do, she shuts him down and says exactly that. I know what you're about to say. Mm-hmm. And itemizes, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to be alone, you're terrible at being alone, you're going to get angry, you're going to want to blah, 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 blah. And she just runs down the list and cuts him off. And you said it, he wears it all on his face. His eyes look like they're about to liquefy, mm-hmm. Because he's just, he can't rage the way he wants to rage.
Yeah. But that's part of what sold that scene, was that, you know, you can see all the emotions that the doctor is going through. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was in tears in this scene. Like, especially, I mean, there were a couple points where it just really got to me. And especially towards the end when, you know, when the Raven hits her and they do the silent scream, and that killed me. Just the, you know, seeing her scream like that. And it, but then, when she hits the ground and you think, okay, this would be the time when the doctor walks over to her body or runs over or whatever and he just turns around. And I was like, that was perfect. It was a bold choice, but that was perfect reaction.
It was honoring the promise for now.
Yeah.
And that's going to be interesting how that promise carries for the next, you know, for our remaining two episodes. I don't want to theorize yet about those last two episodes, but I definitely want to theorize about them. Little things along the way here. I know we could sit there, we could take apart that final scene and some of the dialogue for an entire episode if we wanted to. But there were a couple of key points in there that I think sort of sum up where the two of them stood right at this moment, where they were, and I want to say it, they are as close as they could have possibly gotten before they are irreparably separated. So the idea of the don't be a warrior, be a doctor, heal yourself, because there's an interstitial line where he puts in there, but she says to promise me be a doctor, and then her next statement to him is to complete that thought and say heal yourself, which is something that he's horrible at doing,
right? Well, because he's not a patient that he cares about at the end of the day.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting she brought up the doctor and warrior comparison, because that's exactly the point that River made in Demon's Room. And it's interesting that we're still seeing that coming around.
I guess I'm not sure if that necessarily is any sort of foreshadowing to the fact that we're going to be hearing from her again in the Christmas episode. I doubt it. I think it just may be a matter of what happens when you've got someone who has seen a longer stretch of the doctor's adventures and some of the lengths that he's had to go to, and they know to touch that button, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's foreshadowing either. It's just it's a consistency in the character that we've seen pretty much through the revival, is that the doctor has this warrior in him, and that there's always a chance that we're going to see it come out.
Right, and it's a matter, and that's what actually makes it engaging to see. Which side? Because we enjoy seeing both sides of it, obviously. Mm. There's the point where he can rein it in and do something outrageously clever, but then there's the times when the oncoming storm is unleashed. And, you know, when he says things like, you know, I'll bring UNIT, I'll bring, you know, so-and-so, I'll bring the Daleks in a couple of minutes and give me the time to, kind of thing. Yeah, and he would. Yeah, he
pretty
would.
Much, yeah.
But I think that, you know, when he's in the middle of doing that whole, you know, I will rain hell on you for the rest of time bit, and the music starts back up again, you think, well, he's got this. He's got,
right.
He has the hidden plan.
Yeah.
We didn't know the plan. And then it gets yanked out from under you.
Right.
The music, holy hell. Murray Gold killed it.
Oh, yeah.
In this.
Especially, you know, the redoing of Clara's theme and the slowed down, just piano version kind of thing. Like, it Man, I heard that startup. I was like, oh, man, that's when it all started for me.
Yeah, it becomes Clara's funeral dirge. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to have to go back, and if I can possibly separate myself from the dialogue and what's going on the screen, if I can just isolate the music, I think we may have heard what will be the variation of Capaldi's Doctor's theme. It's a slight turn on the I Am the Doctor, that building orchestral piece. But it's been flipped slightly, and it came in at a point where Capaldi is starting to, you know, get his bluster up. So I'm curious to see if we hear this again, because I think that's what he's starting to establish, that Murray Gold is starting to establish. Right. The shutdown line, I think one of my favorite takeaways from this thing is that when he is at the point where she's trying to get him to promise to keep everything under control, and he's, you know, he's just barely keeping that thread taut, she looks so calmly at him and says, you know, your reign of terror will end at the sound of the first crying child, and you know it.
Oh, I love that line.
That's where I broke in pieces, because that convinced me. And at that point, I had been respecting the script up to this point. And at that point, I actually just started composing a tweet to thank Sarah Dollard for what she was doing. Just too much.
Yeah, I mean,
back up for a second. I want to get your thoughts. Jay, you were starting to take apart the Schilder as not being a villain. Can you just share your thoughts for a minute here about how Maisie Williams, over the course of now the three episodes that we've seen, has done something very different with her character in all three, and whether there's any of those three that you find to be a better fit for that actor?
No, I think that everything she's done this series has been fantastic. I mean, she's played three very, very different roles. You know, the first one being the young girl with the, you know, the storytelling capability and this, that, and the other, and, you know, the bright eyes, everything's, you know, looking up. And then obviously the second one is, you know, someone who's been through the ringer, who has, you know, lived a life, who has seen all these things and carries that weight on her. And then the third one, this one where we saw it was just almost a resignation to the role that she's been cast in, of trying to, you know, keep the peace, do the thing that she promised the doctor she was going to do in protecting the world from him. And it's almost an unwilling role that she's taken on, but she's doing the best that she possibly can with it. And it was just, it's incredible to see the range that she is capable of with these things.
Haley, what's your take on this?
I like the growth that we saw across her three episode arc. And I can't think of any part of it that she didn't excel at. She's phenomenal. For as young as she is, she's become a phenomenal actor. And I feel like we're probably, I don't know if we're going to see her again this season. I don't think so, based on what it looks like the story is doing. But I think we're going to see her again next season, and I'm looking forward to that.
I know, personally, I think I was most impressed with what we've just gotten in this last episode. I liked the, you know, the youth and the wide-eyed sort of the original Ashildur, you know, Ashildur Mark One,
the one that's most similar to Arya Stark.
Sure, but she was able to maintain a distinctly different character. It didn't have that acidity that Arya carries, because she didn't have the same sort of backstory. It was more of a browbeaten character because she thought she was cursed and so forth. I wasn't as big of a fan of Lady Me, you know, the nightmare. I think at that point where it was nothing but cynicism, it was nothing but this sort of derisive kind of intermediary character getting to where she is now as Mayor Me, that I genuinely enjoy, because now it was a matter of, you see the, you know, she's already gone through the rigors of time. You know, she sort of resigned herself to the fact that she's an infinite being with a finite memory and all right. Those sort of things. And that's, I think that's allowed her to create something very interesting and a character very, very dissimilar to a lot of the other been handed from female on the show. So
I liked Lady Me fine. I don't think there's really a problem with the character in that. It's just the rest of the script around it was kind of weak, and I think that's what kind of drug that part of the character down.
That's a possible. Yeah, I have a hard time sometimes separating the the set for the cast. Did you notice? Well, I came across this actually when I was doing a little bit of additional digging into the cast and sort of seeing where some of our supporting characters were coming up from, because I thought I had recognized Simon Bay, I believe his name is, who played Rump. But flipping through, and of course I realized that actually we're not done seeing him. The Rump character is actually already credited for the finale.
Interesting.
But Maisie's not. That's weird.
It could be that they're keeping her return under wraps more so than they would think to do his, and maybe in the finale we return to the street.
True.
What, we go back to Diagon Alley? I'm not sure.
He didn't even buy a new wand or anything. That stunk.
This is more like Nocturne Alley.
Okay, so are we going to hypothesize at all about who it is that got Lady or got Mare Me?
Do you want the realistic ones or the I wish it was ones?
How about one of each?
Well, let's see. Realistic ones. It could be the High Council in general.
That's what I thought, because the Janus kid said specifically that he couldn't see the Doctor's past and future, and mm-hmm. it's just from his nature as a Time Lord. So that made me think that whoever he's up against is a Time Lord or Time Lords.
In a wishful thing, I'll narrow that deep down even further and say it's the Valiant. Which explains the confession dial, because he wants the full account of all the Doctor's trials and tribulations to put him on the stand once again for crimes against the universe, flouting the laws of time.
That would be very interesting. That could be a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd go that far. I think that there's a good possibility that we might see the High Council or, you know, some representative from Gallifrey that's, you know, I don't know. Or on the realistic side, it could just be Missy again.
That was my other guess, was Missy. Or Missy teamed up with somebody else again.
The Dalek time controller.
Oh, jeez.
But here's the thing. With the High Council, there's a sort of a glitch in that, though. Because they were the ones that gave him the reprieve.
Uh-huh.
You know, the rounding error that has allowed him to be in the first place. So why now? And why go through all of these bizarre means when he, for a while at least, was seeking them? They could have just said, oh, here's our GPS coordinates. Track us down.
Because he didn't deal with the guy in Sleep No More. And it's actually a crucial episode for the series.
Oh, no.
Well,
and actually, the next episode is a clip episode of the events of Sleep No More.
This.
Remember that time when the Doctor said...
One of the things I've heard was that the Sleep No More was actually part of a two-parter, and it was actually supposed to be the second part. So
what?
Yeah, we were basically supposed to have something leading up to Sleep No More. I don't know what that means, but I don't know.
The original pub napkin that Gatiss wrote his idea down on?
Something like that. I don't know.
It's just 42 minutes of the camera staring at a napkin. That's why you lost trivia.
All right. Do we have anything else to say about this episode?
Well, we got our feedback.
Okay, yes.
Which we knew we were going to get quite a bit. And it's all pretty concise, I think. I think a lot of people were just sort of in the same stunned state that the Doctor was. You know, this really just happened. Of all of the silly things to get yourself killed over, this was that really? And they're still somewhere in those stages of grief. I know we got Shiris wrote in on Twitter and said predicting the way the Doctor's going to react in the remaining two episodes, that it's going to make him mad as hell with the High Council, if that's what I'm thinking, she says, or slash hoping. And it's the matter of the oncoming storm meets the arrogance. So yeah, Trial of a Time Lord part 5, 6, 7, 8
Okay, before we go too much farther into feedback, they did zoom in on the wristband thing that they put on him. Did that design look like anything for any culture we've seen?
I did a freeze frame on it and kind of closed in. None of it had a pattern that I kind of recognized. There was the brass fitting on one, or the sort of the copper fitting on one side. It was sort of hexagon with a sort of an aperture swirl around it, and the other side was just sort of spring work. You really couldn't make out much of a discernible pattern. It wasn't, if they were trying to imply that it had any sort of Gallifreyan or anything to it, it wasn't clear enough.
Okay.
we also had Jonathan wrote in on Twitter and said, you know, and these were moments as this ended. I was getting these kind of lifetime through the evening. Wrote in and said, you know, I'm both teary-eyed and awestruck at Clara's exit. It's a fitting end for a fantastic companion. And again, who would have thought that we'd be saying that about her a year and a half, 2 years ago? But she's just, the character has come so far. Kodiak tweeted us and said, okay, I hadn't really realized that that was going to happen tonight. Much better than some of the more recent departure. I guess the Pons exits and things don't sit well with Richard. But,
For me, I'm sure I'm similar to a lot of people. The Pons exit was powerful at the time, but on rewatch, you kind of start picking it apart.
Mm. Yeah. I know I'm going to be watching this one a number of times. I don't really know whether I'll be able to find the threads tug on this one because I'll just be too busy just kind of quietly weeping into my shirt. Heather tweeted in to say, well, looking forward to all your thoughts on this one. You know, Claire's departure was quite brilliant in her estimation, so not going to disagree there. Who else chimed in with us here?
Preston said, you know, I'm sobbing my eyes out while my wife and daughter look at me like I've lost my damn mind. It was beautiful. Oh, the feels. Which I think is exactly what I told you guys. The feels.
Yes. The feels. Yeah, there's a lot of mention of feels out there. I know some of the Twitter folk that we keep close tabs with, the Head Over Feels ladies were shattered. They were useless for about 2 hours.
Imagine that.
I'm sure they went to go reaching for their mason jars of wine, and they were just done for the night. The folks from Scarrow had quite a bit to say about it. Chip from 2 Minute Time Lord had some great synopsis on it. I checked in really quickly with Andre over at LIWHO, and he said, you know what, I can't even comment. I'm watched it twice. I'm still processing, and that's going to be a lot of our cases. Still processing.
Yeah. Well, and then Ben wrote to us on Facebook and said, a short review, an episode of two halves, the first part rather slow and plotting, but the second half was nuclear. Jenna and Peter were amazing, and the goodbye was utterly heartbreaking. And then we have the rage of 1,000 burning suns aimed at one person. At that moment, the Doctor had gone to the, and the Destroyer of Worlds appeared, and the universe shuddered. I can't wait to see what the next two parts. And if my theory is right about the end of the season, things are going to go up to 13.
Oh, past 11. The dial goes to 13.
Oh, jeez.
And then we had, I think the last point we had in here, I'm going to credit this one to Basil. Basil, not the Doctor, the other Basil, who chimed in and said, you know, and he related Clara's death as a throwback to Adric in a way. And here's how he justifies it. He said, this is a companion that at least at the outset, many hated. He says, I personally loved Clara. She's one of my top five companions ever behind Jamie, Sarah Jane, Ace, Donna, and then Clara. It's a nice list there. For some people, though, the Clara hate to this day remains intense. That is true. It's unfortunate, but it is still true.
Yeah.
And then his other supporting point to the Adric parallel is that it came about because of an action that the companion thought was safe. Clara assumed that Ashildur's promise of protection was absolute. You know, she didn't look at the fine print or didn't listen to the fine print. I mean, who really reads the terms and conditions anyway?
No, you just click the button and get on with your download, dang it.
Exactly. Come on. New iTunes.
She read the little summary description of the terms and conditions.
And Adric, in his demise, you know, he stayed aboard the spaceship because he thought that he could crack the code and that his math skills were strong enough, and he didn't anticipate the fact that the Cybermen had actually damaged both the TARDIS control and the ship's controls to be able to save him. Boom. yeah, I agree with that. That's a strong parallel.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard that either. I've heard a couple people draw that the similarities there. Not to, you know, that level, but definitely like, man, this kind of felt like Adric's death, you know, and that was typically the end of it. But yeah, this really draws the parallel and proves that there is a lot of similarity there.
So now, just like looking at that image of the broken star badge that resembles Adric, now we're going to have like a cardigan on the cobblestones to represent, or a feather. Although, that brings me up to two things I want to throw at you. Does this give you any reason to wonder why the Doctor was playing Amazing Grace a couple episodes ago?
I don't think there's any connection.
He's always played classic rock riffs.
Right.
And now he's playing a hymn riff.
Remind me, what was it that led into, though?
That was during the Zygon invasion, right before he gets the call from Osgood.
See, if it was something to do with, like, he was playing that and then Clara came on the TARDIS or something, I'd say probably...
Gotcha.
But
The other half of it was her laying on the street surrounded by leaves. Is that the end of Clara's leaf?
Oh, I forgot about the leaf.
There should have been one red one maple
real
leaf.
Big one, yeah. Drift down and land right on her forehead.
Oh. Too soon. Already some of the tasteless memes have been going around. Like, not even good ones, you know, just...
We have to deal with our feelings somehow.
It is, yeah. We do that by making horrible visual references to things.
Then a beautiful memorial that Riggsy gave us at the end with him spray painting the TARDIS.
I hope that actually starts a bit of... I don't want to see it overused, but they're pulling from cinematic stingers at that point, you know, halfway through the credits. Well, they did it actually during the Christmas episode, during the closing credits from last year's finale, leading into the Christmas episode, because we get halfway through the credits, and all of a sudden you get that little Nick Frost moment.
Right.
And it says, you know, Doctor will return with Santa at Christmas kind of thing. And then they kind of held off on that until this time where we get that little stinger, which is just a beautiful moment. But the Doctor's going to have to fly off with that thing, you know, the paint and flowers.
So do you think he's going to hit the chameleon circum button on the TARDIS and immediately get rid of it? Or is it just going to be we're going to start seeing like the faded Clara memorial?
It'll get burned off in the vortex.
That would be kind of rough. I don't know. But yeah, that was just an interesting decision. And it's funny, there's some photos out there. I think it must have been the set crew must have taken a lot of photos of their own, because the angle on that one was sort of a three-quarter turn of the TARDIS as, you know, Riggsy's putting his cans away and walking away. And some of the photos that I've seen, you know, that have gone out since, that were just kind of the final, you know, thanks for everything, Jenna, kind of moments, were taken straight on, which means that they were shot by the crew there on location looking further down that street. That must have been a kind of a rough shoot for everyone. I can't imagine. It's interesting, they shot quite a bit of that in downtown Cardiff. I was seeing a lot of locations that had been used around the History Museum. They used as the back of the, where they were going into the map room and doing all that. There were a lot of the streets they actually, so running down alongside one of the pubs, Tiny Rebel Brewing Company, which is also connected in any way to Tiny Rebel Games. You could see the bear with a fez on up in the, on one of the signs up in the corner there. It's just made me wish I was back. But we've got two more episodes to go. We're coming into Rachel Talalay's direction of Heaven Sent and Hell Bent to wrap up our series here at Full Tilt. If you don't watch the scenes from the next and you don't want to know what's going on in the next one, don't worry about it. It should be relatively easy to avoid if you just shut the power off at the breaker outside your house and just make sure that you don't ever look at your phone. But we did mention over the last couple of weeks that we found that this was going to be a solo episode.
Right.
It's the Doctor entirely on his own. So wherever he's been transported to, he is alone and screaming at an unseen captor. This should be good. Really good. Sick of Aldi just chewing up scenery.
Oh, I cannot wait for this one. I've been looking forward to this one, but now, especially with the events that led into it, I can't even... I don't even know. I don't know what to say. It's going to be amazing.
Do we have a little bit of news that we want to close out with tonight?
We do. We've got a little bit. Let's jump into that. So, as we record this, today is actually Who Day, November 23rd. So, we are, 52 years out? The show has been on the air for 52 years as of today. So, if you remember a couple of years ago, there was a minor little milestone thing, nothing major, but Moffat has actually come out and started talking about the some of the decisions he made with the Day of the Doctor, and talks especially about why John Hurt replaced Christopher Eccleston.
Right. You know, there's quite a bit that you get out of this article. This is actually going to be I'm not sure if this is considered just an excerpt from a fuller interview that's going to be published in Radio Times on the 28th of this month. So you got about 5 days planned to get a hold of this, because if this is just a sign of some of the information that Moffat's now starting to feel more comfortable disclosing with the public about where things have come along right now, this is a really interesting. I found it a really interesting article for no other reason than the fact that I'm amazed that the 50th anniversary episode got off the ground. some of the stuff that was discussed in here, like he had to have alternates of all of these scripts he was developing because he wasn't even sure who he was going to be able to cast.
Yeah, at one point he said at one point the only person he had on contract was Clara. Was Jenna Coleman's
had a version of a story that was just Clara.
Can you imagine what that would have been like? Happy 50th anniversary. You don't get a doctor.
And courted him. Yeah. 50 years of a show. Here's a companion.
They would have drawn and quartered him and then burned those quarters in effigy.
Guy Fawkes would be sitting off the cloud somewhere going, man, you screwed up. He said some things even in this interview that were kind of inflammatory too. You know, the whole line about the original doctors and saying, you know, yeah, I'm a bit of a bastard, but none of the previous doctors still look like they're doctors.
Exactly.
So he actually felt it was better that Davison and McCoy and so forth actually, you know, used their roles in the Five-ish Doctors the way they did. That's a bold statement to admit to.
Yeah, but at the same time, the man's got a point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, going back to what we were discussing about Eccleston, he sat down with him at a couple of occasions to try to broach the subject with him and finally sort of left it in his hands and said, let me know when you finally make your decision. And he heard back and he honors that. Wasn't going to fight him on it. Wasn't going to try to, you know, rope him in through, I don't know, whatever sort of means, guilt or legality or anything. He doesn't hold anything over on him. But he just said, he just reiterated, though, that that Chris remains a huge fan of the show. He keeps up with the program, and he still has, all the love in the world for it. He just doesn't want to stay connected to it at this point in any further capacity.
Yeah.
So
it's a very interesting article and a lot of things that, it shines a light on the making of the 50th, which, like you said, it's amazing we even got that thing.
He was still working on it 3 days before they started shooting.
Like, oh, he didn't even have a solid script at that point.
You're setting the bar for this. But wow. Yeah. So, and then, he even discusses things like Tom Baker's cameo and so forth. So, quite a bit to enjoy. And I'm hoping that the Fuller Radio Times interview has even more. So I'm definitely going to grab that off the magazine rack
when
it's available. So please do. Last little bit here.
This is great. I love it.
And it's a load of fun. And it's just that picture that's worth 1,000 words.
Well,
but when you watch it in a looping GIF, it's worth 1,000,000 words because you watch it 1,000 times.
So recently, this week, we had Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss, and Peter Capaldi all together, and they decided to join a Doctor Who pub trivia game. And they came in third.
Third,
not second. Yeah. Not they didn't lose to one group of people. They lost to two separate groups.
They did not win any coupons.
No, they did not get the coupons.
Not a single coupon. No drink vouchers.
These are three ultimate fanboys.
Yeah. Credited by many to be three of the largest fanboys on the planet today. And they got second runner-up.
I wonder if it was like our trivia contest where they were arguing about the technicality of the correct answer.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. What you don't see, I wish there was a fuller video because it's just the looping GIF that we have in this one, which again, just watch it over and over as all three of them collapse in defeat.
And shame.
but that's probably moments before all of the complaints and caveats and wait, no, that other question, there was a slight inaccuracy.
You pronounced it wrong. It's Metabilis.
Were we referring to the original Cyberman or so
you didn't say the Cybus Cyberman, jeez. Definitely go click on that link and just have it on in the background on your computer for hours and just chuckle the whole day long.
Yeah. Make sure you're playing the Benny Hill theme song in the background while it's going. So you just hear, wah, 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 ticka, 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 ticka. Yes.
Oh, man. But that is all that we've got for tonight. We'll come back next week and discuss Heaven Sent and the amazing performance that Peter Capaldi will no doubt bring to us. So this has been episode 163 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, let me be brave.
Ouch. And this is Kier saying, well, I'm gonna avoid the obvious ones and just say thank you for 52 years. Happy Doctor Who Day.
And this is Haley saying, I know it's going to hurt you, but please, be a little proud of me. Goodbye, Doctor.
Oh, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Allons-y.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.
There were lots of safe quotes you could have pulled.
Yeah, but
we didn't even mention
why
did
I be the good cop?
All the Jane Austen bits. Yet again, more references to hanky panky with Jane Austen.
Right, clearly that's how she got over Danny Pink.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
she says, "I love her. Take that how you like."
Your boyfriend dies. The doctor's like, "Hey, I need to console you. Here, let's take you to a great author." And, you know, things happen. But see, that's why we didn't talk about it, because clearly it's better here in the GPR After Dark.
Is that it? Yeah. Also interesting, too, just the kind of the take on the Janus child and having to the force gender identity.
Yes.
That was a kind of an interesting little thing thrown in just barely there, but yeah, enough to kind of make it say, oh, okay, that's... It's working its way into this material as well. Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool how they tied that in, but it wasn't like a major touch point. Like, you know, we have to bring this up and have to make it a subject. It's just there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the ways they're gonna have to deal with these things. Anytime where they wanna. It can't be overt. It can't be like, you know, and I even have to agree with some of the poo-pooers that say things like the Jenny and Vostra relationship is a little bit too ham-fisted.
Yeah.
You know, where they just keep saying, look at us. You know, just be a couple like any relationship that has ever been televised. But again, that's what happens when you have a lot of middle-aged men writing for female characters. So,
very true.
Again,
getting better.
Mm-hmm.
It is getting better.
So you guys have any exciting plans for Turkey Day?
Yeah, I'm going to finally get to put together Lego Dimensions.
Yay!
It's all I'm going to
work.
Yay, I'm gonna retail.
Work, I'm going to work 3 to midnight and then come back in at 6:30 the following morning. It's going to be great.
That sounds like a solid plan.
It's going to be more enjoyable because you'll still be drunk. Come home between shifts. Eat a cold turkey sandwich. Have a couple of ciders.
What I should do is drink at work, because I will be hall monitoring the toy department.
Oh, geez. Yeah, you're going to need to drink for
that. What is hall monitoring?
It means I don't really have a specific job. I'm just supposed to stay over there and make sure nothing terrible happens.
Make sure no one kills anyone else over the, you know, Bratz dolls or something.
Oof. They still make those things?
Oh, yeah, they're super creepy.
Oh, okay. Didn't someone go around and actually like used paint thinner and took all the makeup off of them and repainted them as like normal dolls?
Yes.
And they're like these cute kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, we got late feedback from Soleil.
Oh, jeez.
Who squeezed it in during the After Dark. He comes in as we're recording and goes, oh, bit of feedback.
Gee, thanks, Soleil.
Yeah.
What, is it about her boobs again?
No, it was actually about the Fraser Hines and Wendy Padbury interview that I posted earlier today, okay. And that he didn't know who they were because we didn't reference who they were at the top of the interview.
Oh.
Well, we by name, but we didn't say, you know, you previous played, companions yeah. of Patrick Troughton playing what. Do your homework, Soleil.
Yeah, seriously.
If only that's there a was some sort of database on the internet of movie people.
If only there were at least 3/4 of Patrick Troughton's episodes available to view. Or this thing where they would collect clips of things on an indexable video archive of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
If only Google owned a video service.
Oh, man, that would be brilliant. They should get on that. They're really missing the boat there.
Where they could take the classic elements of the TV tube and hand them over to you to tube them.
All right, this is getting a little long in the tooth.
Sorry, so late.
Sorry, oh. I'm not sorry.
But we'll give you. We'll close with Clara's her farewell song. I was gonna just play the soundbite, but I'm not even gonna bother queuing the thing up because. And now the love that lasts forever has come to its end.
I deleted
good
the.
Good night, everybody.
I deleted the lighter app off of my phone, so I can't.
Sarah Oswald, Delorted.
Oh, man. All right.
Play us out.
Yeah. But I used to have that one. Dang. I used to have that as my ringtone on my phone. Darn.
Nice.
That'd be brilliant to have right
now. Make everyone walk around you really fast, like smack bald guys in the head.
No, he meant the other one.
Oh.
The J-Bob exit song.
That one. Good night, J-Bob.